organizing director out here for Hillary Clinton's campaign in Utah. We are so excited to have you all here. We're so excited to be joined by Chelsea Clinton, who I don't think really needs a big introduction from someone like me. So I'm just going to turn it over to Chelsea, and she's going to take some questions and share a few words.
Thank you so much, Rebecca. And thank you to all of you for coming today. This is awesome to see so many people here. I'm so excited to be back in Utah to share why I'm such an enthusiastic supporter of my mom's, and to listen to whatever questions may be on your hearts or minds in advance of the caucus here next Tuesday. I want to thank Rebecca and our whole organizing team and all our volunteers, all the people who made these amazing signs and helped gather all of us here today. We couldn't do any of this without all of your help. I also want to thank Jim DeBacchus, Jenny Wamoto, Gene Davis, Patrice Arnett, Sandra Hollins, Brian King, Carol Spackman Moss, Peter Caroon, and just everyone who is supporting my mom here in the state. Thank you all so much. I think this is the most important presidential election of my lifetime. And I feel that way for two fundamental and admittedly interconnected reasons. The first is that this is the first presidential election I'll be voting in as a mom. And I didn't know I could care anymore about politics or who was running for or holding political office until my husband, Mark, and I decided to, and we're blessed to be able to start a family. We welcomed our daughter Charlotte into the world 17 months ago. We're expecting her future little sister, little brother this summer. And admittedly, with that, I'm going to sit down. And I'm going to sit because I hear my doctor's voice in my head telling me to not stand for too long. And I grew up going to events like this, in places like this. I don't really remember a time in my life when I wasn't at an organizing event or a political rally or volunteering at a campaign office. I remember stuffing lots of envelopes as a kid and answering phones saying, you know, Clinton campaign headquarters, can I help you? And yet, for all of what we did for my dad and all of what we did to support whomever my parents were behind, who was running for city manager of Little Rock or mayor of Little Rock or running to represent our community in the Arkansas State Legislature or to represent Arkansas in the Senate or the House, and of course, whomever was running for president as a Democratic Party standard bearer, this just feels so much more fundamental to me because whomever we elect will play such a profound role in shaping the country, the world, the future that my children will grow up in, that Brooklyn, whom I just met, will grow up in. So I am here clearly as a proud daughter, but also as a mom. And that's one of the main reasons I'm working so hard on behalf of my mom, because although I couldn't imagine a better grandmother for my children, I also couldn't imagine a better president for any of our children than my mom. And the second reason I think this election is the most important presidential election of my lifetime is because I worry that everything I care most about is at risk. And I want to just share a few examples of kind of why I carry that concern in my heart and why I so strongly believe my mom is the candidate we need in November and the person who's really ready to be an effective president come January 2017. And the first thing I want to talk about is healthcare. I remember back in 93 and 94, my mom fought really hard for universal healthcare coverage. And rather infamously, her efforts then didn't work out. And they didn't work out in part because the pharmaceutical industry and the health insurance industry spent tens of millions of dollars to defeat her efforts. And yet she didn't give up, and she could have. I mean, it was pretty bruising. I remember it being fairly nasty. And she could have said, oh, I'm just too tired. Maybe there'll be a better day to wage this fight again. But she didn't. She said, we can't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. And I can't afford to be tired because we have to keep working to make progress. And she spent 3 years building a bipartisan coalition to create the Children's Health Insurance Program. And the Children's Health Insurance Program now insures more than 8 million low-income American kids, including thousands right here in Utah. And that matters to me, and I think it should matter to voters, that she is determined, that she's dogged, that she never gives up, and that she is able to find common ground and build coalitions across party lines when possible. Because like in the 1990s, Republicans control Congress today. And even under the most optimistic predictions, admittedly speaking as a Democrat, Democrats aren't expected to take back the House. Not in this election, not in the next election, not in the next election, maybe after redistricting, so maybe in 2022. But we can't afford to wait. And so we need a president who does know how to build coalitions, who has been able to do that to achieve things like overhauling adoption out of the foster care system. There are now 80% more young people, toddlers, and babies adopted out of the foster care system than was true 15 years ago because of work that my mom did with a man named Tom DeLay. And it's hard to find a more conservative Republican than Tom DeLay. When she was in the Senate with Republican support, she doubled funding for early Head Start programs and early Head Start parent support programs. She worked with Senator McCain to extend VA coverage to our National Guard's men and women who've deployed overseas, so when they come home, they and their families can be part of the VA system. That matters to me, that even in this moment of politicization and polarization, that she has a real record of still being able to break down barriers and make progress on behalf of people who too often have been left out, left behind, not included or ignored, like our foster care children. And I hope that'll matter to voters here in Utah. Oh, and with dramatic lighting, nonetheless. And yet, as important as it is to be able to find common ground, it's also important to be able to stand your ground and to know how to make our government work on behalf of our values, when in office and when not in office. And I think my mom's time as Secretary of State really reveals that she understands that. And when she was Secretary of State, she did a few things that I think really illustrate this. She set up the first high-level office for someone to monitor on behalf of the U.S. government how countries around the world are treating girls and women. And she made it clear in our foreign policy and her diplomacy that how countries treated girls and women was going to affect how the United States viewed and treated them. And she expected all of our embassies around the world to report regularly on how the countries in which they were located were treating girls and women. Secretary Kerry's continued that. And I think it's important, admittedly, that a man has continued that. But it's also important because it'll be much harder for someone later to dismantle that and to send a different signal and to tell the thousands of Foreign Service officers who work on behalf of all of us every day that all of a sudden we no longer care about girls and women. She did the same for indigenous minority communities around the world, and she did the same for the LGBT community around the world. She set up the first high-level office to monitor what's happening for LGBT rights and opportunities around the world, and she set up the first dedicated fast-track asylum process. So sadly, when, not if, but when LGBT activists and advocates are being persecuted or even prosecuted, they can quickly apply for asylum and get to safety in the United States. And Secretary Kerry's continued all of that. That too will be hard for someone to dismantle in the future. And while I hope that we always have a Democratic president and therefore a Democratic Secretary of State, I don't want to bet on it. I don't want to bet people's safety. I don't want to bet people's opportunities or rights on it. So it matters having a president who knows how to make government work. Because if we have any doubt that our values are currently kind of under threat, we only have to listen to the Republicans on any given day. The almost normalization of hate speech, the racism, the sexism, the Islamophobia, the homophobia, the anti-immigrant rhetoric, the rhetoric against Americans with disabilities. The list just goes on and on and on. So knowing how to make government work on behalf of our values when in office and when out of office really matters. Last thing I want to talk about before opening it up to your questions is the Supreme Court. Now, when I first started talking about the Supreme Court a few months ago, I had no idea that the court would be thrust into the center spotlight in the way that it has been with Justice Scalia's passing. And I always take a moment to recognize that his sudden passing was clearly a tragedy for his family, his friends, his colleagues. And I think it's important for those of us, and maybe even especially for those of us, like me, who violently disagree with Justice Scalia on everything, to still recognize in this moment of hyper-politicization that we do hopefully still have a sense of shared humanity. That for his 9 children, his almost 20 grandchildren, his colleagues on the court, his sudden passing was clearly a tragedy. Justice Ginsburg, who's about as far away from Justice Scalia as you can get on the ideological spectrum, has spoken really movingly about how he, more than anyone else, helped her understand quickly how to be an effective justice. Now, that wasn't in his ideological interest, but he knew that it was in the court's institutional interest. And yet what his passing has revealed is why the court is so important. And if you listen to my mom's Democratic opponent, he talks about the Supreme Court generally through the lens of campaign finance reform and the need to overturn Citizens United.
Yes.
And that is hugely important. And I think it's hard to argue my mom doesn't have a personal interest in that, given that Citizens United was an organization set up with one purpose, to derail her 2008 presidential campaign. So for my mother, this is ethical. She knows that we need to remove the absurd equation codified in Citizens United that money equals speech and corporation equals person. It is also, yes, indeed, personal to her. She also knows that the Supreme Court is important for so much more. And just a few examples of why I think we can't afford to have a single-issue president, because we don't live in a single-issue country. In 2013, the Supreme Court vacated or overturned a core part of the Voting Rights Act. We are seeing the direct consequences of that in this election. We are seeing more voter ID restrictions in this election than at any time since before the Civil Rights Act. So we have gone back more than 50 years. So if you care about voting rights, you have to care about the Supreme Court. With Justice Scalia on the bench, the Supreme Court actually had an uneven record on gun control. Sometimes it upheld local gun control measures as being compliant with the Second Amendment, and sometimes it struck them down. So if you listen to Moms Demand Action or the Brady campaign, the kind of major efforts in our country pushing for smart, sensible gun control to protect our families and our children, and in full disclosure, organizations that have endorsed my mom, they say they believe the next time the Supreme Court rules, it will rule definitively on gun control. It will say, this is what Second Amendment compliant gun control looks like in our country. So if you care about gun control, you have to care about the Supreme Court. We saw in the week, even the dog agrees. In the week before Justice Scalia's passing, the court took the almost unprecedented decision to preemptively stay President Obama's executive actions to shutter coal-fired power plants and move the United States forward in the fight against climate change. The court's expected to rule definitively on that probably later this year. So if you care about climate change, you have to care about the Supreme Court. Last week, we saw the court hear challenges to something called Texas Law HB 2, which, although intended, in theory, to protect women's health, would, according to Planned Parenthood, if allowed to stay in place, restrict more than 25% of Texas women's not only ability to access reproductive health services, but the ability to access affordable, high-quality health services at all. And what is happening in Texas is not singular, as I know you know here all too well. Since 2010, there have been more than 300 laws passed at the local and state level restricting a woman's right to choose that, if allowed to stand, will also restrict a woman's right to access affordable, quality, safe healthcare services. This year, there are more than 300 similar laws proposed, including right here in Utah. And Planned Parenthood says if those that have already been passed are allowed to stand, and those that are expected to pass are allowed to stand, At the end of 2016, more than 50% of American women will have our healthcare access restricted. So if you care about a woman's right to choose, or you care about a woman's right and ability to access affordable, quality, safe healthcare services, or if you care about equity, because wealthier women in our country have always had choices, you have to care about the Supreme Court. And the court also stands in the crucible of determining whether or not people really have a right to unionize and what workers' rights mean in our country, what immigration reform in our country can look like while we're marching, hopefully, toward comprehensive immigration reform, and so much else. But just one last example. As I know you know also far too well here in Utah, you're one of the 31 states where it's still legal to discriminate against someone on the basis of gender identity or sexual orientation. So although now Americans have a constitutional right to marry, in theory, on the same day that you could be married, which should be the happiest day of your life, you could also be fired, denied health care, kicked out of your home, or kicked out of school. Not the Utah law, but other laws are being challenged currently through the court system and are expected to reach the court next year at the latest the following year. So if you care about equal rights, you also have to care about the Supreme Court. We do not live in a single issue country, and we can't afford to have a president who treats either the executive branch or the ability to work with Congress or the Supreme Court as a single issue institution. And although I hope strongly the Senate does indeed do its job, it's my favorite hashtag at the moment, do its job, and gives whomever President Obama nominates a full and fair hearing so that we can have a full court. Even if that happens, this question's not going away. Because if you look at the average age on the court and the average age at which justices historically have retired, the next president will appoint one, two, possibly even three additional justices, shaping the court for a generation. So this matters a lot this year. It matters a lot for ensuring the Senate does its job, but it also matters a lot for this election. So clearly I am such a strong supporter of my mom's for just a few of the reasons that I've shared, and for many others that I haven't gone into, but I'm happy to go into if you have questions on them. It matters to me that my mom's been on the right side of gun control questions. As a parent, I couldn't even imagine the everyday horrors that the Newtown families must live every day, knowing that their first grade children didn't come home a couple of years ago. When I'm thinking about ensuring that every child can have access to high quality early education, and that my mom understands that we need to start thinking about that literally about now, because 80% of our brains are built by the time we're three, it matters to me that my mom understands that and that she's been working on these issues for literally longer than I've been alive and making a difference in these areas. So I support my mom for so many reasons, and all those reasons for me now come from the place of being a mom myself. So thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much for supporting her. I'm so thrilled, actually, that she has canine support as well. Thank you. And if there are thoughts or questions, I wouldn't know how to interpret what you're asking, but you can also ask a question, little one. I feel like I should know, what's his name?
Tachi.
So Tachi, I wish that I could understand so that you also could ask a question, but truly, questions, thoughts? Yes, ma'am.
I would like to know if you're going to run after your mom's
So, thank you. So for those of you who couldn't hear, she asked if I was ever gonna run for office. Well, after my mom's two terms, knock on wood, with your help here next Tuesday. I have been asked this question my whole life, and I actually think that's a real gift. And one of my earliest memories is being at a political rally and waving an American flag on the side, because you can't do a lot else when you're a little girl, but like wave an American flag, and this woman coming up to me and saying, "Chelsea, do you want to run for governor of Arkansas one day?" And I think I said something like, "Ma'am, thank you, but I'm three." But I share that story because I think it's a question that we should be asking of anyone who wants to make a difference in our country, particularly of young people, but not only of young people. Because if I kind of think about what my dad shares from when he left Georgetown, he thinks probably about half the people that he graduated with that he was friends with, and admittedly he was in student government, so I'm sure there was a selection bias, but he thinks about half the people that he was friends with were at least considering going into public office at some point. Whether or not it was their kind of lifelong calling, as it very much was for my father, or whether or not they were going to first serve in the military or be lawyers or be doctors or social workers or wanted to work in the nonprofit sector, at least they thought about that. When I graduated from college, I had friends who wanted to do all of those things. I have friends who today are in the military, who are social workers, who are lawyers, who are doctors, who work at NGOs. I don't think any of them think about running for public office. And I think that's really unfortunate. And I think we need to be kind of validating and encouraging anyone of any age, but particularly young people, to recognize that there are only certain kind of good things that we can help happen or bad things that we can stop from happening kind of through the political system. And for me now, to directly answer your question, the answer is no. But I want to share why it's no at this moment in case it's helpful to you or anyone else here today. I first ask, you know, do I think that my values, my family, are being well represented by the people that I directly can vote for? And right now, that answer for me is yes. I really like my city councilwoman. I think she does an awesome job in New York. I really like my public advocate in New York City. I think she does an awesome job. I like and support my mayor. I really like my governor. I like my congresswoman. I like my senators. You know, I'm clearly a big fan of the president. So I say that because I might feel differently, right? I might feel differently if I live somewhere else. But so the people that I can vote directly for, I think are doing a really good job. If that were to change, if my city councilwoman were to step down or my congresswoman were to step down, I then would have to ask and answer the question, do I think I have a vision, a real vision for what I would do in this job? And do I have the skills and experience then to be able to realize that vision for what I would do in this job? And I make that point because I think oftentimes people don't understand what the possibilities but also the limitations are in different jobs. And that really was something I realized probably about 5 years ago when I had two experiences close together. I had a woman stop me on the subway in New York who was so angry at President Obama because we had stopped recycling in New York City. Now, I was really frustrated that we had stopped recycling in New York City, too. I was frustrated at our then-Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Right? I'm sure that President and Mrs. Obama are very diligent recyclers at the White House. The president has no authority over whether or not we recycle in New York. But for this woman, she thought the president had control over everything. And I think just the second kind of point before I wrap up, or the second kind of illustrative story was I was stopped by a man while I was standing in line at a pharmacy. I was really involved in the equal marriage fight in New York. In the first two times when we weren't successful, and thankfully in the third time when we were successful. And shortly after that, this young man came up to me and he said, thank you so much. And I said, well, I don't think you should thank me. This is something I'm grateful our state voted to be on the right side of. And he said, now that we've gotten to equal marriage in New York and elsewhere, surely the president now is just gonna make this happen across the country. And I said, well, the president can't do this alone, really can't do this at all. It's why we had to have this fight in New York State. Under the Constitution, marriage is rendered unto states, so we just gotta keep going state by state unless the Supreme Court rules in the equal protection issue. But I realized that so many people don't understand kind of what's possible or not for a president to do. And I think we see that in some ways in this election. I mean, we see that when Mr. Trump says, Speaker Ryan is just gonna have to listen to him and do what he says. No, the Speaker of the House does not work for the president. Or when Senator Sanders talks about his free college plan, which largely relies on states to come up with billions of dollars. And even liberal progressive governors, like Governor Brown in California, say they don't have billions of extra dollars in their state budget. And then you look at states like Utah that have been cutting funding for public education. And it's hard to see how that would happen. So I always, whenever I think about this question or share how I think about this question, say I think it's really important for anyone who thinks about this question to just have a sense of, you know, what would I do in this job? And kind of what skills and experiences would I need to bring to be able to do the best possible job within the possibilities, but also the limitations of whatever I would be running for. But you're completely right, and clearly I get the sense that a lot of people agree. I'm very lucky to live in a city and a state and a country where I support all the people who directly represent me. Yes, yes.
So it's an honor. So I'm a proud gay Latino immigrant, now a US citizen, so I support your mom. As you know, in Utah, people believe that it's a very conservative white state, but right now our Latino population is about 20%. Many of them are undocumented. They are not fully residents or citizens. I also work for a major health insurance company, and I work with the Latino community. Many of them are really interested in purchasing health plans on and off the exchange. Many of them actually can afford a health plan, but the Utah government requires an application for all applicants who want an individual plan. And one of the questions is, are you a citizen or a permanent resident? So a lot of people who are willing to purchase health insurance without any type of subsidy cannot apply because one of the questions is if they hold a green card. I know that your mom is a proud supporter of equality and immigration reform. And one of the challenges we have in our country is healthcare, which is the skyrocket price increasing every day. Is she planning on expanding Obamacare, as people know, ACA, to include people that are not fully documented? Because when you get ill,
yes,
your illness will not ask you if you are a permanent resident or not.
It's such an important question. Thank you for supporting my mom. My mom has very strong feelings that we must push as quickly as possible for comprehensive immigration reform. And this is a real difference between her and Senator Sanders' record, that she supported comprehensive immigration reform at every possible chance, and she was one of the original supporters and sponsors of the DREAM Act. In 2003, the first time the DREAM Act was introduced, she was one of the people that introduced it. She does not believe, though, that while working towards comprehensive immigration reform, we should make people wait, like the families that you're talking about. Which is why she thinks it's so important to extend the Affordable Care Act to people who are living and working here, regardless of immigration status, regardless of citizenship status, because we shouldn't, again, let the perfect be the enemy of the good, right? While we're pushing for comprehensive immigration reform and reminding Republicans who are currently running for president that a couple of years ago they actually supported comprehensive immigration reform, something they seem to have forgotten during this election, that we do whatever we can to solve challenges in the healthcare system, the education system, and elsewhere. So thank you so much for asking your question, and this is something my mom feels so strongly about. And when she was able to extend the Children's Health Insurance Program in the early 2000s to include legal immigrants, she had hoped to extend it to all immigrants. She lost that fight, but at least now children who are documented, who are not citizens, are able to participate in the Children's Health Insurance Program. But she has been, I think, kind of on the right side of pushing for full health care inclusion, really for as long as she's been pushing for universal health care. So it's such an important question, and it's an important question because too often it's thought of as being solved with comprehensive immigration reform. But we can't force families or expect families, because we would not expect this of our own families, and we would not want this for our own families and our own children, to wait to be able to have health insurance and access to the healthcare system while pushing for comprehensive immigration reform. So thank you. Yes, yes, ma'am.
I'm Mary Allen. I am a former vice chair for the Skull Valley Band of Goshu Indians. As a Native American, not only that we have rights to vote off the reservation, we vote for our own tribal chairman and vice chair also. But I haven't really, for me as a comment, I loved your dad because I, as the vice chair, when I went to Washington, D.C., I had the pleasure to meet your father. So he helped the Native Americans, from what I understand, throughout the United States. So for me, I applaud him for that. And also, I would like to hear more things about the Native American people, because I've never heard anything, because we're always left out. And this is our land. Like Trump said, yeah, go home.
Well, thank you. And Tachi clearly agrees with you. Yes. So interesting what Tachi cares about here, really. I mean, when he's barking, it's clearly an indication of something. On a serious note, thank you for your comment about my father's administration and for your question about what my mom would do. As you may or may not know, you know, New York State has a significant Native American population from the Seneca, from the Iroquois, and from other tribes. I mention that because I think that a lot of people think that New York City and New York State are the same. Right? And most of New York State is actually outside of New York City. And so my mom, as a senator, spent a lot of time working on kind of specific issues related to the tribal communities that she represented, including trying to improve the quality of the Indian Health Services and have more oversight over the Indian Health Services, something that she thinks remains kind of unfinished business throughout the United States. Extending the Violence Against Women Act, protections and provisions to women who live on tribal lands. We're seeing the consequences of not being able to do that with what's happening in Pine Ridge right now and elsewhere across the country, so this is hugely important. And also ensuring that Native American voices are included. I think that her campaign is the only campaign that actually has had a Native American representative, I think, from the beginning. So you've now seen kind of other campaigns, and I think that's important too, add Native American voices and representatives subsequently, but from the beginning, she's had a Native American presence in her campaign because she agrees with everything that you've said. And something that my mom started pushing for back in 2006 that was a big part of her campaign in 2008 and a big part of her campaign now is her infrastructure plan. Her plan to invest $275 billion in repairing the infrastructure we can see and that we can't see, our bridges, our tunnels, our roads, our sewage systems, and our water systems. And she believes there's a lot more bipartisan support for this, partly because she's been working on this for so long than there was in 2006, sadly because we face infrastructure challenges across our country. And that there should be ways through partnerships to include tribal lands through this. Even if the federal government couldn't make direct investments, at least in partnership with tribal leadership, as you just mentioned, being able to still ensure that the federal government is making those investments. And similarly, being aware of that and what she wants to do in investing in renewable energy, given that a lot of the places where the sun shines the brightest or the wind blows the hardest that have the greatest power generation potential are in tribal lands. That's both kind of the right thing for us to do and a smart thing for us to do as a country. It's also the right thing and the smart thing, hopefully, to do in partnership with the tribal community. So those are just a few examples, and I'm sorry that you don't hear more about it. I hope you will go to HillaryClinton.com and learn more than what I could just answer in a brief period of time. Yes. What was it like to live in the White House? Yeah, will you tell me your name?
Cam.
Cam, and how old? Sam, excuse me, Sam. And how old are you, Sam?
How old are you?
You're four. Four. Well, Sam, thank you for coming today. And I think it's so important. I hope all of you that have children or grandchildren will bring them to the caucus with you so that kids can see kind of democracy in action and be part of it. Yes, and we can take a picture with Sam afterwards, because it's so important, I think, that kids grow up sort of seeing citizenship as just part of what it means to be an American. So Sam, thank you for asking your question, and thanks for being here. So I would say living in the White House was both really extraordinary and pretty ordinary. It was extraordinary in that every day that I came home from school, or I came home from church, or I came home from a friend's house, or I came home from ballet. I took ballet really seriously in high school. I walked into the White House, and that was amazing. I don't think there was a day that I wasn't incredibly inspired and humbled by the fact that I walked into the White House when I was coming home from wherever I was coming from. And I always felt a real responsibility to the families that had lived there before and to the families that would live there after. I mean, I didn't know that Malia and Sasha Obama were going to live there after me, but I knew that there would be other children of presidents who would live in the White House, and I wanted them to be proud of how respectful I'd been and how I lived my life when I was living there. It also, though, was pretty ordinary. Every night my parents were in town, which was most of the time. We had dinner together, even if they had to go back to work afterwards. It was one of the benefits of living and working in the same place, basically, was that my parents could come home for dinner and then go back to work, just an easy walk away. They asked me the same sorts of questions that my friends were being asked by their parents over dinner. What did I learn in school that day? What was I the proudest of that day? What was I disappointed in? What did I hope for tomorrow? What were my plans for the weekend? And so that also was pretty ordinary. And I'm really grateful that my parents created sort of that ordinary environment, even in kind of the midst of something that was extraordinary and such a blessing and such a privilege and such a responsibility. So that's a really great question, Sam, and I hope you get to go to the White House someday. Every president since John Adams has lived in the White House, so there's a lot of American history there. So thank you for your question, Sam. And I think, sadly, we now have to end, but I actually think, in some ways, giving a four-year-old the last question, it's perfect, because every election is fundamentally about the future. So Sam, thank you so much. Thank you to all of you. I hope you'll all caucus for my mom on Tuesday evening, and I'm just so grateful to, that you took the time today. Thank you so much.
Thank you all so much again for coming. As you know, we are 1 week away from the caucus, and there's a lot that needs to get done in order for us to win, and we just heard from Chelsea about how important this election is for her and for her daughter, and it's really important for me, for my grandmothers, and for my sisters. My sisters are teenagers, so sometimes they're great, sometimes not so much. But it's very important for me that they grow up knowing that no matter their gender, their sexual orientation, or their religion, that they can be whatever they want to be. So I need something from all of you. I need you to find our organizers who are standing in the hall, and I need you to sign up to either knock on doors or to make phone calls this weekend. This is it. This is the last time we have to talk to every Democrat in the state and let them know how the caucus works, what time they need to be there, and more importantly, where exactly they need to be. So please, please sign up for a shift, sign up for two shifts. If you want to sign up for the whole weekend, like, that would be the best. I will be here. I practically sleep here now. So please sign up. It's a huge honor to work with all of you and to have Chelsea Clinton here in the state. And just thank you all so much for coming. Thank you.